Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Stargazing with Star Fuentes. Star Fuentes is a master intuitive healer and spiritual teacher and has been a pioneering student of metaphysics for over 50 years. She has learned lifetimes of priceless information from her years of seeking out and living with indigenous healers and shamans around the world. Visit her website at www.starfuentes.com and then join her here every Wednesday night on Spiritual Connections Radio as she shares her knowledge with you. And now, Star Fuentes.
Welcome. After the half hour, we will be taking calls. Get a confirmation. Ask a question. Learn something. 646-716-9663. I have a wonderful guest for you tonight. She is a friend, a student, a master in her own right. Her name is Maureen Healy. Are you there, Maureen?
I am. Thank you so much.
I'm so glad to have you here. Now, I'm going to ask you to tell my audience a little bit about, tell them about yourself, just more than a little bit.
I don't know where to begin, but, you know, let's see. I guess my background is blending psychology and spirituality and energy healing with a particular focus on children. And I've worked with kids here in the U.S., overseas, at the base of the Himalayas, in India, in Europe, and, you know, kids are all the same, and I've just seen some remarkable things with children, and my last book was about indigo children in particular, and before that I focused on my book called Growing Happy Kids, which is, you know, fostering a deeper sense of happiness in kids, but I work with parents and children no matter where they live.
Good. And what is your website?
Sure, it's growinghappykids.com.
Ooh, what a nice, easy name to remember, growinghappykids.com. Talk to me about those old souls in those little bodies. Talk to me about all the light and energy that may confuse a parent. Sometimes the child is born as the teacher. Talk to me about the difference that the indigo children have brought into the parent-child relationship in the last 20 years.
Great question. You know, oftentimes, I mean, I see our children as just so highly energetic. They have so much, like you're saying, so much energy and so much intuitive intelligence as well as other intelligences flowing through them, that oftentimes if kids don't learn how to manage their energy and manage their emotions, it can come out in ways that aren't skillful, or adults or parents and teachers, if they don't know what's going on or they don't help their children manage their energy, you know, it can come across as looking challenging or difficult or stubborn or strong-willed, and it certainly can be those things, but there are certain ways that you can work with children to help them, you know, release negative energy and pent-up energy and learn how to ground themselves as well as be creative and imaginative. Because our goal is not only to, you know, help these kids be who they came here to be, but do it with as much ease and harmony as possible. So I see lots of children that come in, like you mentioned before, as the teachers, and who come in and are these wise old souls and say things that clearly, you know, stump their parents, how did you know that, and things like that. So they get, you know, they get this intuitive intelligence and connected to all there is. It's almost really our role to help them navigate our world here on planet Earth.
Wow. You know, it reminds me of a couple of decades ago. I was walking, I was in some metaphysical place or center retreat, and I was walking by, and I saw one of the little children there, and I went, "Billy, Willie, are you having funny money in the sunny?" And all six-year-old Billy looked up to me and said, "Star, I'm an old soul in a small body. Don't baby talk me." And I just was taken aback, and I was like, me, who's never at a loss for words, was my mouth was looking like a fish, and I realized I will never, ever talk to a child like that again. And just for that, those children that I have met who have the consciousness of connecting to the bigger picture, the reincarnation, that there is a soul in the body, is amazing to me. And how do the parents handle this, especially if the parents are not educated in the energetic differences in the children coming in?
Well, I mean, you make a really important point. I mean, I think part of the piece of the puzzle is that we can't parent or raise children the way, per se, we've been raised, or the old way doesn't really work. So it really is partnering with them and helping them succeed, and really that old way of authoritarian parenting, or saying, hey, do this because I said so, it just doesn't work with these children. They can see right through things, and they oftentimes, you know, they have a good, what I would say, a BS detector. They know if you're being honest with them, or they know what's really going on. I mean, they're certainly small in their bodies, and they certainly have things to learn, but, you know, it's really helping them understand how to manage their energy, and also, you know, looking at the child as, you know, someone, if there's a problem or displaying tantrums or, you know, challenging behavior, it's really they're not understanding how to manage their energy, to sort of shift the paradigm and say, okay, how can I help? What do they need in this moment?
Okay, so the nation says that 58% of our children are ADD, so that's now the norm. Is it really ADD, or is it really the energy flowing through the children differently?
Oh, I think it's the energy flowing through them differently. I mean, it's non-linear. Kids learn in a non-linear way. So that old way of just memorizing, root memorization, and feeding things back, which is what oftentimes, you know, adults have gone through, that's not working for them anymore, and they're not willing to go along with that. Their minds are much more creative and imaginative and putting different pieces of the puzzle together and learning in different ways. So, you know, I really do like the way Doreen Virtue, an author, has said that ADHD is, you know, attention dialed to a higher dimension. And I believe that is true.
Well, I noticed that when I was a little girl back in the never minds, but when I was a little girl, somebody gave me a puzzle of the United States. I would put every piece of that puzzle in until I got it. And just having kids around, you know, the church and everything else, if you give them a piece of a puzzle, United States, and they've got 12 pieces left and they can see where those 12 pieces go, they get up and go do something else. And the adults, try to drag them back and say, finish this puzzle. But the kids can see where Florida goes in and where Maine goes in and whatever it is. They can see the completion of it, so they're off to another task. And they're not wasting their time or energy to put in those last pieces. And I was working with some children, and the mom says, you know, the kid only gets the first four math problems on their homework. So what I did was I taught the parents to fold the paper, their homework, in half and give them just the first half to finish and then turn the paper over and give them the second half to finish. And remarkably, for some reason, if you give them everything to look at, they'll figure out half of it and then dismiss it instead of writing down the answers. What's your comment on, I mean, I can see that this is conceptual learning and they got it. What's your comment?
I mean, absolutely. So I agree with you fully. What I have found is that kids, you know, finish things in their mind. So they are so intelligent and intuitive and sharp. And, you know, there are certain things that we do have to finish on planet Earth, that we do have to complete. You know, I mean, I see kids that have finished their homework and, you know, put it in their bag, their book bag, but forget to hand it in to the teacher. You know, so it's really helping them not only complete things, you know, in their mind, but bring it down to this plane of existence, especially for, you know, there are things that actually matter. And, you know, they're not lacking in intelligence. It's just a matter of completion, which is, you know, brings into that idea of a different kind of learning. And I think that, like, folding over the paper, and there are different things to help them, you know, stay interested and begin to appreciate the value of actually completing things on paper and on this plane, too.
Okay, so I'm a non-parent. I mean, I can't say that because I've had probably 5,000 kids and birthed another 500. But really, I don't have a child this lifetime. Mm-hmm. What new circuits are there out there? What new ways of being as children are there out there that it would be beneficial for you to describe to me and to our listeners?
Well, one of the reasons my last book, The Energetic Keys to Indigo Kids, why I focus on indigo children is that that energy or those type of kids are highly sensitive and also just highly, highly sensitive, but they also carry that defiant, stubborn, or strong-willed energy. And when you learn how to, and it also is a similar mindset, so they are deeply, they want things to be fair. They want to be treated equally to others. They want to be partnered with. They want you know, people to be honest with them in their lives. So, but the deep sense of sensitivity and that deep fierceness they have, that's helpful to look at from an energetic perspective, because oftentimes, right, you know, parents will say, oh, my kid's a problem, my kid's a challenge, but it's really them not understanding how to manage their energy and really channel that energy for good. So oftentimes, you know, when you switch the paradigm to seeing how, you know, what their energy are, you know, is, whether it's being a peacemaker energy or whether it's something more stubborn or fierce like the indigos, they can, when they learn how to manage it, they can have more success here.
Okay, and what should I say? What should I not say? What should I respect? What do I need to know? Maybe as a grandparent,
right,
what do I need to do, and how do I need to pause a second and change my interactions and my relationships with the indigo children? What do I need to do differently?
Right. Well, I would partner with them. Opposed to saying, oh, you must do this. I would partner with them, give them some choices, whether it's doing their homework right after school or before bed or, you know, giving them some choices and some power in decision-making. And also, you know, I'm a full believer in negotiation. I think that, you know, if they can help you, you can help them. We're all in the process of spiritual growth and development. So I don't think, you know, there is a place for negotiation. So that's a little bit different, but that works really well with the indigos. And I would, you know, they really want a voice and a choice. So that time where people were, you know, children were thought of as, you know, heard and not seen, that is over. They really want to be seen and supported and partnered with. And it takes more effort oftentimes up front, but you'll save the time and less tantrums and less problems. And you know, one thing that if I was a parent or a grandparent that I would ask a child, you know, in the midst of a issue or challenge or problem or almost meltdown would be, you know, what do you need? What can I help you with? And they'll tell you. They'll tell you exactly what they need. So that's a very helpful approach as well.
And that sounds good. And I was noticing we had a couple families over here, and there were four 3- and 4-year-olds here, and one of the parents says, share your toy.
Right.
And the child looked up and says, I am not sharing my toy with someone who does not have a toy of their own. And something just went off in my head about fairness and that.
Right.
Children, these children want things to be fair, and no longer can you say children should be seen and not heard, because their excitement, their love, their laughter really can change your own energy.
Mm-hmm.
And in that way, they come in and teach us about spontaneity, they teach us about observation, and many other things. So for me, the indigo children have challenged my own belief system, my own structure of what needs to be or how children are. I've also noticed that lights are too bright and sometimes sounds are too big for them. What about that?
So say that again. Lights are too bright. And what was the next one?
And sounds are too big or too loud for them.
Right. Well, they are highly sensitive. So they have a highly sensitive nervous system, and they're very sensitive to sensory input. So that is bright lights and sounds. I've worked with parents who, you know, their children wear, you know, noise deafening headphones in school, which helps them really focus, and who you know makes accommodations because truly the lights are too bright for them, and that they do better in natural light, and they do better not only sensitive to outside sounds and smells and things of that nature, but they're sensitive to energy, and they're sensitive to the environments that they live in, the physical, the way their room is set up, and the colors that they wear, they digest them like food. So they are highly sensitive, and yes, sometimes this is certainly an insensitive world at times, but the best that we can do is to help them, you know, manage their sensitivities and make a good school match to the best of our abilities and help them, whether it's ourselves as parents or teachers or connect them to someone else who's really learned how to use those sensitivities in a successful way, because I really do think that they need a mentor. Even young kids in elementary school, to have a mentor that has learned how to be successful being sensitive in a world that sometimes doesn't always value that, I think is essential. It's really needed. It could be a therapist, a coach, a family friend, someone at church, someone somewhere in their life that really sees their greatness and helps usher it forward and helps them be strong when they need to be strong and, you know, honors their sensitivities and doesn't make them wrong or weird or strange or anything like that.
So what do you think who published your Indigo Children book?
The New Page book.
The Energetic Keys to Indigo Kids was published
by
New Page.
Yes.
New Page. I got a book published by them also. And I can buy that on your website, which is?
GrowingHappyKids.com. You can really buy it anywhere.
Okay, so we'll look into that. So also, the kids, for me, are aware on another level. And there was this kid, and he was looking at his plate, and it was mashed potatoes. And
mm-hmm.
I didn't remember right, but anyway, somehow it looked like a lot of two or three things that were white.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I don't like white food. And I went, why? He says, white food doesn't make my body smile.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at all these carbohydrates on his plate.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, wow, this little kid is so in tune with his body that he knows these massive, this cheese and noodles, this white bread, and this mashed potatoes are not good for him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I was just amazed that at 5 or 6 years old, the Indigo Children have a level of perception that just can blow you out of the water. Okay,
right.
So I got a question for you. What is the most important thing for parents to know?
I mean, my belief system is really just loving them unconditionally. I think sometimes we fall into a quick way of, you know, kids get the wrong impression that they, you know, the parents love them if they get A's in school, or they love them if they please them, or they love them if they're perfect at this. And I think that if you, you know, make sure that everyone knows that regardless of behavior, of course we want to all do the best we can, but that there is just that foundation of love.
I think that's really, really important. So you've been dealing with children for, I don't know, a couple of decades or more, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What is the difference you're seeing in the children now as opposed
The biggest, easiest way I guess I would describe it is, you know, decades ago we had kids who, you know, if you said go to your room, they would go to their room. You know, they would do it. But today if you tell someone go to your room, they're going to be like, I'm not going to my room if I don't want to go to my room. So, in other words, these kids are not programmable. They come in with a strength and a courage saying, I sort of know who I am. And I want to be that person, and I have a right to be that. So they really are, I don't know, I guess just strong-willed in many ways.
And strong-willed doesn't necessarily equate to bad. It's manageable if you have the appropriate tools and strong-willed. Uh-huh. You know, the people who are most successful on the planet are strong-willed, you know. They had
right.
the will to follow through on whatever their dreams
mm-hmm.
were. I'm getting a better picture about this. So you see parents and their children, and you see the children alone and the parents alone, or how do you handle your work with them?
Sure. I mean, it's always different. I'm in Southern California. So if you're local, I'll see the children and then I'll see the parents, because you really want both of them to connect on a deeper level and implement practical things that make their lives easier and happier and help them connect better. But when I work with parents oftentimes over the phone and Skype, you know, they'll come to me with these highly sensitive children and just want to understand their children better. So I usually translate sort of what the child is thinking and what they're feeling and what that really means, and they get some insight as well as practical tools that they implement, and then they come back and say, okay, that really worked. What else do you have? What's going on now? So I see myself as a resource.
And sometimes do you see yourself as an interpreter?
Oh, absolutely. It's, you know, the parents and children are living in two different worlds. So it's really, you know, building that bridge between them. And oftentimes I'll find one parent is like, okay, totally tuned into their child, and the other parent thinks that, you know, Martians dropped them off. So it's really helping everyone get on the same page and honor who the child is, you know, and really support their success and parent them in a new way. That's really the approach.
How has the two-income family, the Latchkey Kids, where both parents are running to pick the kid up from work, or either one of
right.
them, or are needing two incomes to survive, or what has happened now with two parents staying at home because so many people have lost their job, has the dynamic of the family changed as the dynamic of the children have changed?
You know, it's interesting because I was a latchkey kid, so I don't see as many latchkey kids, but I see a lot of families where, you know, not only are there two parents working, but oftentimes they're choosing a job or a position or work that one of them can stay at home with and work from home so that there can be more availability with kids. What I'm really seeing is a lot of indigo kids, really, who have become adults and parents, and this deep desire to parent them in a different way. And I've also seen a lot of kids who are they're flexible. You know, if their parents are divorced, fine, they'll go with the flow. I see a lot of flexibility in children. So, and I have seen kids with just this, you know, I see a lot of kids who do need mentors in their life, because it's not always the parents who are going to get them. So I still believe in that idea that it takes a village to raise a child. So whether it's the neighbors or spiritual community or wherever it may be, you know, I think that there needs to be support, because there is, you know, there is challenges along the way.
I have a new mentoring business with a friend of mine, and we open up January 1st, and we're going to work with teens. So that to me, that seems very important. And, of course, having been the young woman who traveled around the world and lived with the indigenous shamans, you know, and chopped wood and carried water, all these people were very, very strong mentors to me. And so most of my mentors were how to be, but I can tell you, I had a few mentors that taught me how not to be.
Mm-hmm.
So I strongly recommend adults participating with children and teens.
And they're all our kids, like you said. You have 5,000 kids. You know, they're all our kids.
Yes, and you know, whether the kid is misbehaving or the kid is an angel sitting there drawing in their notebook, I work very hard on not treating them because of their behavior. And I will look at the child who's not behaving well, and I say, why did you make this choice? And I go, what choice? And then they'll figure out that they chose that behavior, maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, instead of saying, that's bad behavior, you should stop that right now. You know what I mean? And
right.
I attempt to work upon, you know, we create our own reality, and why did you make that choice, and how did you make that choice? And some of them just looked at me, and some of them, well, I got it.
Right. And when you say, why did you make that choice, I mean, inherent to that, underneath this is the idea that they have power, and that's really what we want kids to get, is that they have the power to make smart choices. That's there in them. So let's encourage them to do so, right? I mean, that's a huge lesson.
It is. And speaking to them, and, you know, my husband, he ran juvenile delinquent camps when he was younger, and I don't care what kid comes into the house, he sits down on the floor, sits down and gets eye level to them, and talks to them like they're adults, you know. And kids follow him around Walmart and all these other things. And he has this great, great energy that seems so natural. And for me, I have to work at it. I have to, you know, I have to think before I speak. I have to pay real attention. You know, and of course, I was born in the 30s, so there were several generation gaps here. So I'm very conscious of being with the soul, whatever age the human body is. Tell me, what was your greatest spiritual lesson while working with these children?
Oh, that's a really good question. I guess since everything is spiritual, but, you know, it's never make any assumptions. You know, and go in without any judgments on whatever the situation is. I think that children and their parents or teachers or whoever's working with them, they're coming to you for a reason. So sometimes I'll think, oh, you know, the child's four, they can't read per se. So I had a client who was four, and I had my notes out on them. They were clinical notes at the time. I was doing more traditional psychology, and he could read all the notes. He read everything. I'm like, oh, my gosh. So it's really not making assumptions on their developmental level, their capacities, to who they are, who they came here to be. Don't put anything on them. See them clear and then help them, you know, really support them in being who they came here to be and honor your role in their life.
That's an interesting statement. Honor your role in their life. You know, it's many, many, many times parents come, people come, they come with other people's children, they come with their grandchildren, and at that point in time, like, I didn't even know they were coming, and my role in life is to be what? The mentor, the teacher, their friend, their equal. What is my role in life? What do you think?
Your role, Star?
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean other spiritual peoples. What is their role? I mean, I don't ever, when I have church on Sunday and I'll have seven children in there, I don't ever start a church service without saying, and hi so-and-so, ho so-and-so, and I name every child in church so they won't get up in the church and want attention. You know what I mean? And it works most of the time. It works very well to start at the beginning of the service and greet the children, and most of the time they will get through the spiritual service without causing havoc. Of course, babies do cry and all that other thing.
My role
is to treat them as an adult.
Well, no, I mean, I think that the biggest piece of the puzzle is oftentimes these kids are coming from all sorts of experiences and challenges and different things in their lives. So to spend a little time with them at the beginning of the service or whenever it may be to help them know they are valuable and meaningful and they came here for a great reason. I mean, these little things, you know, spending time in their world and honoring them and greeting them and, you know, saying that you really appreciate them being there. That might be the bright spot in their day. You don't know, but they carry that with them, and I think it's extremely valuable. It's almost like they have a flashbulb moment that they can go back to and remember that smile, that shining light, and that you saw them as someone great, and that helps them begin to see themselves that way.
Okay, we're coming up on our break here in a minute. So everybody take a deep breath. Remember,
You're listening to Stargazing with Star Fuentes. Star Fuentes is a master intuitive healer and spiritual teacher and has been a pioneering student of metaphysics for over 50 years. She has learned lifetimes of priceless information from her years of seeking out and living with indigenous healers and shamans around the world. Visit her website at www.starfuentes.com and then join her here every Wednesday night on Spiritual Connections Radio as she shares her knowledge with you. Once again, Star Fuentes.
Hi, we're taking calls right now. The number is 646-716-9663. Maureen and I will be answering your questions, giving you confirmation, clarity, and light. So once again, our phone number is 646-716-9663. Right. You know, I think children are just so amazing. And how have you been amazed by children?
Oh, I've been amazed how intuitive, psychic, and connected they really are. I mean, amazed. You know, they can pull things out of me that I'm like, wow, how did you know that? You know, just extraordinary experiences and just their creativity. They are so innovative that I know that if we nurture these kids, that, you know, they're here to make this world a better place. And part of our role is not to get in the way.
I have seen, like, three-year-olds playing games on their apps of their iPhones of their parents. And I've had a three-year-old recently be playing on my iPad and said, buy me a new game. All your games are boring. You know, well, of course I went and got her a little free game. With their ability, you know, I mean, I'm going to ask a three-year-old to fix my VCR or something like that. Their ability to comprehend the use of these tools is pretty amazing. Can you talk to me about how connected they are to all the technology?
Well, I think they're born for another time. So it's clear that technology is just playing such an increasingly big role in our world, and they're born to use it like no problem. Like, for example, I had someone who saw one of those old record players in my house, and they said, is that a big DVD? Because they had no idea that records even existed. And so I laughed at that one. But they're born to use technology. They're hooked in, and I am not against them diving into technology. I think it certainly can be used very well for learning, very well to have fun. I certainly think that it also needs to be, you know, limited at certain times. They don't need to be on the computer in front of their TV for 10-12 hours a day. But certainly, you know, technology is going to be a big part of their life. And, you know, the way that it's used will be so central to the way we live that they're born with that connection. You know, kids are born from the consciousness of the planet when they come into the planet. So, of course, they're technologically connected. That's just natural to them.
I think that's really wonderful. I had to get a little laugh. We had three or four kids over here, and we were doing flashcards. I think they were 3 or 4 years old. And I held up the number 11 and to see if they could tell me what it was, and one of the little girls called it pause. You know, like pause on the DVD.
Oh, funny.
I was like, what's this? This is pause. And I was like, okay, I took me 30 seconds to get it. You know? And I'm like, all righty. We've heard a lot about your book, The Energetic Keys to Indigo Kids. I want to hear a little bit more about growing happy kids. Talk to me about that concept in that book.
Sure. The book Growing Happy Kids is about really nurturing a deeper sense of happiness, what I would call lasting happiness in children. And I come at it from the direction of confidence, really, that there is outer confidence and inner confidence. And outer confidence for children would be, you know, they feel really confident when they can kick the ball into, you know, they can kick the soccer ball into the goalie. They know they can do that. They're confident about that. Or they're confident in another task, or they feel outwardly confident when they're all dressed up for, you know, for school or whatever it is. But inner confidence is that deeper sense that they can persevere and overcome obstacles no matter what happens in life. And I present in the book Growing Happy Kids the five steps to confidence, the five building, I call it the five building blocks of confidence. And they're happening all at the same time, but it's important to consciously go at it and to make sure that you're nurturing this deeper sense of confidence in children, because with that they can persevere and overcome obstacles and lead the life that of their dreams. So it's really essential to that deeper type of happiness where it's not only contingent on outside things, but it's really an inside job.
Well, that sounds like a very good book, and I also can get it on your website, which is growinghappykids.com, correct?
That's it.
That's it. So you used to live in Florida. Now are you living in Southern California? What part?
I'm in Malibu, Los Angeles area.
Oh, what a beautiful area that is. Do you find the children are different from coast to coast, nation to nation, any particular way?
I certainly find that children of different geographies have different, kids are really all the same, but they certainly have different influences, you know, culturally, geographically, you know, spiritually even, you know, depending upon the family that they're raised in. But, you know, one of the reasons I wrote Growing Happy Kids, because that's the thing that ties us all together. We want to be happy. We just go about it sometimes in different ways. But that's really, you know, their deepest, you ask any parent and they want their children to be happy. So to do that from a conscious perspective is really helpful.
You know, what I've noticed about children is they're so in the now time. If they're eating an ice cream cone or eating a carrot, they're eating the carrot, and you call them, come here, come here, and here, come here, and they'll say, no, I'm eating my carrot.
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever mommy says, come in from playing, and they go, I'm playing. And, you know, the children have this natural sense of being in the now and sometimes cannot comprehend when you try to pull them out of the now, you know,
with,
like you say, negotiations.
Right, right.
Have you noticed that about how children are in now time, not in the past? Or
yeah, I mean, I guess from my perspective, you know, when I wrote about it in Energetic Keys to Indigo Kids, I talk about it that they're at home in the timeless realm. They're at home in creativity and imagination and play, and that part of our role is to help them figure out time, you know, that there is time, their schedule, when to go to school, when to go home, you know, so helping them with that transition to really manage time. Not that we don't want them to be in the now and have fun and play, of course, but to help them, you know, work within time is helpful too.
And when does the child become the teacher?
I think that they're all here to teach. I think that, you know, parents can be certainly the leads and, you know, authority figures of the family, of course, but they are teaching us constantly from the get-go, kids. You know, that the things that they say and, you know, the idea of, like you just said, being in the now, you know, they're not worrying about the past or fretting about the future. They're diving into their video game. They're reading their Harry Potter book. They are, you know, outside jumping on the trampoline. They're not worrying about the test tomorrow. They're just doing what they're doing. And that's a huge teaching.
And, you know, so many people now go out in the world and they're 45 years old or older and they're paying for classes and reading books on how to get back into the now. You know, so you watch the children. You can learn something.
That's it.
What else do we need to know as parents and as human beings about?
Hey, sir.
Okay, got a caller?
You ready for some callers?
Yeah, we are. Who do you got there for us?
Well, we're going to bring Steve on first. Steve, you're on there.
Hi, Star. How are you?
I'm fine, Steve. And how are you?
Well, let's not go there. Let me ask the guy quickly.
Okay, so what's your question?
Okay, so our building was sold, and we have a management company that's already kicked a lot of people out. We have legal protections, but they've even changed the key in the building, and I got two, one from me, one from Matt. But I've never, even though he's legally allowed to live there, we've never actually you know, gone and said, I'm living with a domestic partner. I mean, we would like more keys. We'd have to fill out an application to get the keys. How do, what should I do about it?
Okay, well, I will definitely do some prayers and call me tomorrow and we'll go through a step-by-step energetic process for you. Okay?
Star, thank you so much. I love you, sweetheart.
I love you, too. I'm sorry, Marina. We really didn't need you there for that second.
No problem.
Next caller.
All right. Yeah, we're going to bring on Matthew. Matthew, you're on the air.
Well, this is going to be very brief, Star, because I was asked by Steve to get on the call to make sure you gave us your prayers. So thank you very much. I love you, too. And Maureen, go back to work.
I'll pray for you tonight as soon as I get off the show. Good night, Matthew.
Okay. All righty. Is it Katharina?
Yes.
Yes.
Hello.
How can we be service?
Hi, I'm wondering for Maureen and Star, both how you see our schools evolving. I work in an elementary school in a lower-income neighborhood, and I know that the kids are teaching us all the time with this, the ways that they challenge us. And I think part of the education is that the kids are helping break down the teachers' ideas about what should be done. But I know that our schools could do a lot better job, and I'm wondering how you think our schools could best serve our children? What ways could our schools evolve?
Maureen, answer that, please.
Sure. I mean, I see the schools changing dramatically just because, you know, traditional regular schools aren't able to teach children in ways that work for them. I mean, that's my own experience.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I see things having to change. I mean, like we talked about, the children, you know, they're not programmable anymore. They're not learning. I mean, even if you look at ADHD or ADD with, you know, I think they said almost 70% was the last thing I heard of kids who have something like this. And you can't just put students like that in a big classroom. So I think it's just going to be a necessity of change. I've seen a lot of schools and models out there that are extraordinary, but I do think that we need to, as adults and as educators and leaders, look for the best out there and really make an effort to create a program that works for more of our students, because they are not learning in the way that they used to learn. You know, our school system is made for a different time. I would think you agree.
And I'm wondering about not just methods, too, but how our curriculum will evolve. How it will evolve, because I see a great need to connect the kids with nature more and also help develop their spiritual side.
Mm-hmm.
If you see that, is that helping to address some of their, helping us them all to grow? Do you see that happening?
Yeah, I think that we are moving in that direction. I do think regular schools will start to be more creative and honoring of the spirit, whether it's yoga, meditation, the different things. They may be doing it in a way that's not, that sort of still can go across all denominations for religious purposes. But I do see that schools will be more, for example, I see children that are going to be able to travel more within school, in high school, taking a year to go abroad. You know, that wasn't on the table when I went to high school. And I think that it's going to be encouraged more to take a year off after high school before college and say, okay, what do I really need this? What do I want to do? Where are my passions? How can I serve the world? I think that we have more global citizens and more children that want to do sort of humanitarian type work as well as whatever other career is calling them. So I think that
and what I see that's been really interesting is the schools have been posting the homework on the internet and posting the assignments. So the parents get on there, the children get on there, the parents get on there and comment, this was a difficult assignment for my child. We took 5 hours when it says it should be a 35-minute assignment. And we're starting through the internet to form a community. And then one parent comments on what another parent said. Well, here could be I got my child to do this way, that way. And I've seen these schools where used to be teachers and students, and PTA was about it. And now, with them posting on the internet the homework, their choice of extra assignments, and having the forums where the parents can teach each other what they did mm-hmm. to shift and change their child, that it's going to be pulling in more community. And like Maureen says, that sometimes these children's the parents will mentor each other, and mm-hmm. then the parents will be mentoring or giving advice to the parents and children of others. So I think that this is going to shape and shift the schools much more than people saying, well, we should have this and we should have this. Mm-hmm. I think that the parents and children will get back to the teachers, and that will make a huge impact on the school systems.
Right.
Awesome.
And there's a school in New York that went all digital. I think it was Stepanek High School. And already the students are changing the way they learn, meaning it's more about learning. They can go to all the books are online, so they can go to any grade and any subject and learn what they want to learn. Of course, there's a curriculum, but it gives them sort of the keys to the kingdom of learning. They're not stuck with just one book. They can develop curriculums. They can develop classes. They can light the fire of true learning earlier on. And I see that being more the emphasis versus a rigid set of, okay, you must learn Latin 1 or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. Can you give me the name of that school, please?
I think it's Stepanek High School, but my Twitter is MD Healy, and it was one of my tweets. I know I tweeted the link to the article and the video.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Yeah, thank you, sweetie. Anybody else there?
Yeah, we have Marie on.
Hi there. I have a daughter who is 6, who has been diagnosed with autism, but I think she is a very energetically gifted child. She kind of lights up the room when she walks in and things like that. And I was just wondering if you had any suggestions for me.
Go ahead, Maureen.
Sure. I mean, it sounds like she's a happy child, correct?
Oh, yes, very happy.
Okay, so what is your question, meaning, like, how do I help her? I'm not sure. What's the question?
I apologize. I guess I didn't get to hear all of the show. I just know that you work with children a lot.
So I guess
I really don't know what your area
That's
is.
That's okay. Yeah, I mean, my experience has been with autistic children that they really are happy and that they really are in their joy, and helping them build their skills and their strengths and their confidence and sort of normalizing who they are, I think, is huge. And then connecting them with other children who are similar. Not, I'm not saying they have to be autistic, but who have similar gifts and strengths, and really, you know, that can encourage them. Because I think, you know, there is autism, it's such a big spectrum. There can be brilliant, genius kids there. You know, I mean, it's no sort of reflection on intelligence. It's really sort of how they're animating their life. So I believe everything is, you know, dynamic and changing, and I think as long as you can hold the vision of her as being perfect and that she's a loving, happy child, that's a huge gift.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And what would you like to see different about your child?
Mm-hmm.
What would you like to see different about your child?
I think she has a lot of gifts socially, but I feel like since she's been put in the autistic spectrum classroom that she's losing some of her social
mm-hmm.
abilities. I think she's kind of, she was more with her more normal peers before she's in first grade. So starting in the middle of kindergarten, she went in with the autistic spectrum, and my concern is that she's losing her ability
mm-hmm.
to say, hi, my name is, and what is your name,
mm-hmm.
and things like that in the autistic spectrum classroom. You know, she's very intelligent. You know, she reads well and things like
and,
that.
And so what do you have to do to get her moved into a regular classroom?
I don't know that I
so the,
can.
Well, this is my question to you.
I mean, really, honestly, I want to start a school for her, but had a chance to do that yet, but eventually I will. So, mm-hmm. you know, where she can be outdoors more and, you know, on mm-hmm. the farm and stuff like that. So.
Mm-hmm. And please remember, if she's very, very psychic, then she might be perceiving people's chat in their head, listening to spirit guides, and she walks in the room and we hear three voices talking, and she hears
yes.
34 voices talking. I would also suggest that you get someone who's very intuitive, whose business is intuitive readings or something, to take a good look, feel of her, and see maybe if we can turn down the knob or turn up the knob of something going on in her, and get someone who's very sensitive to look at her.
Mm-hmm.
You
yes.
know, that would be good. Anything else, Maureen, for her?
No, I mean, I think that, you know, helping her manage her energy, just exactly what you're saying, is really important, and putting her with kids that will see her, you know, that will honor who she is, meaning you want to put her around kids so she can develop those skills. So I think, you know, if she's a mild autism, I'm not sure putting her with autistic kids, like you said, would be the best. So just sort of reconsidering and having someone, like you said, intuitively look at her and helping her manage her energy, I think would be really terrific.
Mm-hmm.
Thank
yeah.
you. Thank you, sweetie.
Thank you.
Okay, Nicole, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, Nicole. How can we be of service? What's your question?
I have a son who's in first grade, and he's slightly behind in reading. I don't think it's hugely behind. They have these letters for what reading level they're supposed to be on. And the book he works on is an F, and he's supposed to be at an H. And by the end of the year, they're going to be tested on reading a story that's a couple pages long and then answering all these questions. And then we just got something that said that pretty soon they're going to be timed in their reading, because studies show that by third grade, if they're not reading at a certain pace, they'll never develop it. So how do I stay out of overwhelm and fear and help him just progress reading to enjoy it and not feel like, you know, we've got to hit these milestones that just feel horribly, you know, I want to say unrealistic, but I'm guessing a whole bunch of educators came up with them, so they probably don't think they're unrealistic.
Okay, Maureen, handle that, please.
Sure. Is this the only school you can send him to? Are there other school options? What are your thoughts on that?
I like the school.
Okay. It's a good fit for your child.
It is, yeah. It's just, this is, I guess, a state reading program, and it's what, you know, we have these state standards, and then, so, she's just telling us so that we're aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we can work with him to get him to a good level.
I mean, my recommendation would be someone like a tutoring or a reading specialist to improve. I mean, someone who's skilled at helping him learn in a way that it's your son, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In a way that he learns. So, like, the Ortum-Gilliam is a great approach for children who learn in different ways, but there's other ways to teach them how to learn, because, I mean, I was in first grade, and I wasn't reading the way that the school thought I should or as fast as they thought I should, and certainly I'm an author today, so there's no sort of, like, you know, if you don't do this by XYZ day, it's cut off. You know, you grow and develop in ways that are healthy and that are his unique pattern, the way he was divinely designed. So, you know, if you feel like you really want him to meet these standards that someone set up who doesn't even know him, then I would, you know, work with a tutor or help him get the kind of support that he needs so that he can learn those skills. But he may, you know, his reading and abilities, you know, doesn't mean it matches up with exactly with the curriculum. He's going to grow and develop at his own time, and if you need to supplement that, do that. But, I mean, from an idea of staying out of fear, you know, we can just pray and know that he's in the perfect and right place with the perfect and right parents, and that, you know, you'll get the support that you need. And if you feel strongly that this is the right school, then, you know, you do what you can so that he can be the best at this school, but don't place, you know, approval from them as a really valuable thing. You know, he's a great kid, and it's just about how you can support him in bringing out his greatness, which may or may not be in reading, but he can certainly learn those skills.
I have noticed that children who are very auditory have a hard time learning in the very beginning of school. One of my suggestions is that somebody say the words out loud while he points his finger at them so he can start associating the sound and the word. Because auditory people store their memories by the sounds. And usually auditory people are behind in the beginning years of reading. So that be a suggestion is that wherever he reads, you have a tape of it, or you sit there and say the words. And usually they catch up once they start relating the sound to the vision that is on the paper. So that may really, really help them.
Get a tutor.
Tutors know all sorts of tricks. This is the mind I am of. If you're going to pay for a reading tutor, then you find his strongest suit and you pay for a tutor to do that. My friend has a child who's bad in math, and she got a math tutor, but this child is great in art. I made her get an art tutor. So when you tutor a child, you should tutor a child in whatever their least thing is and whatever their best thing is. Got it?
Okay, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So sound. Thank you.
Sorry, that makes so much sense, by the way.
All righty. Do we have one more caller there?
Yeah, you got 4 minutes. Go ahead, Maria.
Hello?
Hello. Can I answer your question? What is your question?
Whatever you can pick up that's coming in positive and travel-wise, because I've been putting a lot in for the last couple weeks. Whatever you can pick up for me for the positive.
Maureen?
Rosemary. Is it about a child or it's about yourself?
Job-wise for me.
You go, Star.
Okay. So you're saying that your inner child is not doing well? I'm not understanding
you. No, I'm putting in a lot for job-wise. And I'm wondering, what's coming up, because I've been putting in a lot, had a few interviews. What's coming in for the positive? I've been working hard on it.
Your positivity should be after January 2nd. Right now, everybody's between holidays. They don't want to do the extra paperwork. They're doing things just to get them over with, and they're not really seeing who you are. Mm-hmm. I think somewhere between the 2nd and 15th of January, you will have an appropriate job, one that you like, with almost everybody that you like except for one person, but every job is like that. So,
that's true.
Look, don't hold your breath for the rest of the month, and you can breathe after the first of the year, and you will have something shiny and bright for you, okay?
Right. My only thing is to add is just keep planting seeds for the next 8 to 10 days.
Well, you don't stop sending out your resume.
Right.
You don't stop reading the paper, because you might read something and get an interview, and they won't hire you till the 3rd of January.
Right.
But that's when the energy shifts for you between the 2nd and 5th.
On behalf of Spiritual Connections Radio, thank you for listening to Stargazing with Star Fuentes. Please join us again next week for another enlivening episode. For more information on Star's classes or services, visit her website at www.starfuentes.com or call the office at 501-609-0660. That's 501-609-0660.